Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
It's getting dark.
And Josh Brown.
I'm in the dark.
It is getting very dark. We are recording this later on in the day. It's just the way that it goes sometimes. Sometimes it's just electric light is the only thing keeping you going. But Mr. Josh Brown recording this in the dark with a little Christmas tree behind him keeping him going.
It's all me, he needs. The Christmas tree, Joe Pesci, the two things I need in life, including myself, I guess.
Some light in the background. So we thought we'd do a sort of a glazed over look at 2021, focused on some of the games that got us through the year. But I also want to open it on a general talking point, because I feel like overall this year gets referred to, or is getting referred to, as a massive disappointment, as one of the worst years in, you know, quite some time, et cetera, et cetera. And whilst I can see the arguments for that, I want to put that out as the initial talking point. Do you guys think that 2021 has been a disappointing year for video games?
No, I mean,
I don't think so. Like, when I started putting together my Game of the Year stuff, there was tons on there.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I might just be lucky enough to have played so much this year, more than I ever have before, which might skew my opinion. And yes, that has been
just everything other than that.
Scott, completely complete tangent here. I messaged my mother the other day pleading her to get me Metroid Dread for Christmas, just right, so I could please you and finally play it. So it is on the way.
Okay, it's if that's the conduit, I'll be messaging her myself. Just I need to let you know, make sure it comes in.
We have to wait for the old man to drop it down the chimney for me on at the end of December. But no, I don't think it's necessarily been disappointing. I think there have been a lot of really good games. It's just disappointing when you line it up to what we were initially going to get at the start of the year before a lot of things got delayed. You know, big hitters like God of War Ragnarok and Horizon Zero Dawn. This year was supposed to be stacked. It's nowhere near as stacked as it is, but that doesn't mean that the games that came out this year aren't good and, you know, amazing in their own right. I think it's just when you compare it to the hypothetical.
Yeah, I mean, there's been this has been kind of like the year of the of the indie, of like the B tier, like a sort of very some smaller studios sort of stepping in, going like, okay, we can take the spotlight for a bit. And like, so I think the overall amount of stuff that's worth playing is still sky high. It's just that you don't have that many things on the AAA space necessarily. There's not like that many Resident Evil 8s, let's say. But Ben Roy, what's your thoughts on the year overall?
I think it's been a pretty good year, you know. I think it's because the games came in like waves where more so than ever, I think like we just had splodges of drops and then there was nothing. Like that's how I felt. Mm-hmm. And until recently, I was like, oh, Game of the Year, my top 10 is pretty weak. And then I'm like, I've got to take something out because Chernobylite is just crawling up inside it and just climbing the ladder every time I jump into that lovely dystopian world. So I've played. It's weird because I looked at my what I do is on Letterboxd and other things, I put all the films I watched in the year and all the games. And this year I've played less new games because as Josh said, things got moved around. Mm-hmm. Then like films is weird where I've watched like 20 more new films than I did last year because films are back apparently. But with games, I think it's just there might have been less big hitters coming out, but at the same time, I went back and played older stuff that I'd never touched or older stuff that I wanted to clean up. So I wasn't, maybe if you'd asked me this back in September or August, about bit like this. And then we had like a drop of four things I wanted in October. And I was like, you know what? Let's go. 2021, so, you're right.
One thing that I want to kind of focus on a bit is that obviously it's Xbox's entire game plan overall to focus on Game Pass and give you all this, you know, this massive archive of stuff, monthly access points, and they've put so much work into backwards compatibility. But we should talk about, as an umbrella topic, that idea that this was the year all of us went back to stuff. Like, I think, Benroy, you got your PS3 this year, or was that last year?
Yes.
Yeah.
I got a PS3 this year.
To the point of being able to access a whole bunch of stuff that isn't available on PlayStation that you can go back and buy and, like, you know, play the Sopranos game or whatever else isn't available in a more mainstream sense. But I think the backwards compatibility, obviously, like I said, it's more of an Xbox's business plan, but it became a thing that we all did this year. I'm kind of curious whether overall people did that, but I feel like because there weren't as many massive, you know, like eyeball commanding releases, that we found the time to go back to stuff. Because Josh, I think, well, I think all of us, we went back to different things. But Josh, what grabbed you in that regard?
Oh, dude, I bought 2 copies of Matrix: The Path of Neo. That's how much I was invested.
Why did you
in,
buy 2?
It was an accident, I'll say, okay, to my lawyer when he arrests me for this.
When he kicks the door down, he's finally
trapped. Why is my lawyer arresting me? That's a bad lawyer. yeah, I've definitely been playing so much, so many old games this year. That's where I've got my enjoyment from, is mostly from replaying stuff. You know, mm-hmm. we all had the lovely 100-hour binge of the Mass Effect Legendary edition.
I've got that written down, yeah.
Yeah, Death Stranding is going to be one of my games that I talk about, because I loved going back to that. And it was just been a joy, whether it was on PS Now, whether it was buying all PS2 games, whether it was Game Pass, going back and having the time to revisit old favorites or revisit franchises that I always wanted to get around to. Like, it's been the year for that. Last year was to an extent as well. And it's just kind of made me thoroughly appreciate the sheer library that's available now, and all of those great experiences that you can more accessibly than ever, like, jump into.
I kind of feel like if we didn't have the way things rolled out this year, we wouldn't have freed up the headspace to be able to do this. Because, like, yeah, there is, like, so many... I mean, I've been replaying the original Halo because I'm just that wrong and I have to go back to certain things. But I think that, like I said, if we didn't have so many little gaps in between the bigger releases, you might not have freed up the time to go back to those things, because the average indie title is only going to take you 7 to 10-ish hours, if that, sometimes. But Benroy, what's been tickling your backwards compatibility ivories?
Well, I could cheat and say the Mass Effect trilogy, but I'm not. I'm going to cheat in another way and say the Splinter Cell trilogy. the Splinter
Cell. A better trilogy, I might say.
Tom Clancy's classic HD Splinter Cell trilogy, remastered in HD. Just that's the full title on the box there. And yeah, I went back and played all of these. It had been since forever. I don't think I've played Chaos Theory since, like, the month it came out. For,
really?
Like, Wild Things like that. But yeah, just going back and... think it and reasserting my brain to where I thought, Splinter Cell 1's the best one still. Like, so I have a fond spot for that, but nah, it's really Chaos Theory, and Chaos Theory's really great compared to, like, games now. And boy, is Pandora Tomorrow still rough in some
Pandora
places.
Pandora Tomorrow is so rigid. I think Chaos Theory has barely aged a day. I don't know if you found that, like, playing something like that in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, like, the only thing you could really say about that sort of game is that the levels are pretty cramped at some points, but I don't know, grew up with those smaller levels in my life, so I'm kind of, like, happy and content with that. I'm glad it wasn't, like, you know, running around the giant open world to find some, I don't know, some goggles in the bushes. But going back to Splinter Cell, and then just seeing how game stories have changed, and how, like, as that franchise went on, that we got more and more focus on characters. And yeah, they did things like Sam has a daughter, but then they ignore her for, like, half the series and other aspects of that.
And she's dead, and she's not.
Yeah, and just hiding around in the dark and realizing this is, like, this game came out like a PS2 and original Xbox, and playing it on the PS3, classically HD remastered, is just, you know, was so
also,
nice.
Addendum to that the original Splinter Cell trilogy is on Xbox backwards compatibility as well, if you didn't get the disc version or whatever, as is the Max Payne trilogy now, finally. Just want to take a minute to just be happy that those games exist again, because how long have we wanted Max Payne 3 to be available? Could do with the 60 frames a second thing, but you can't, beggars can't be choosers. Beggars have got to get whatever they can put out, so there is that. We should focus on the Mass Effect Legendary Edition, because all three of us played that. I think, Benroy, it was your first time through it this year, or the first like majority of Mass Effect this year. And that was one of the games that I had down as literally one of the games that got me through the year, just revisiting that franchise, loving that first game. I still dropped off when I got to Mass Effect 3 because it's such a different game. I just think it's, I hate that thing. But Mass Effect 1 and 2, especially 1, I reappreciate it in a whole way that I think I just couldn't do back in 2007, just because of how much I've changed as a person or how much I can appreciate something now that I'm older. But Benro, you were new to Mass Effect this year. This was also something that made a big old dent.
Yes, it's one of those things that I was wanting to get to for ages, and the rumblings of rumors. I think for like a few years now that they were going to do the old remaster, Joby, because I think I've said this before, but one Christmas I had the choice from a relative, like, do you want one game? And I was looking, and my tastes were a bit still rigid back in like 2007. I wasn't sure what I wanted. And it was between Assassin's Creed or Mass Effect, I whittled it down to. And I chose Mass Effect, and I played it for a few hours. I didn't enjoy it. Traded it with one of my friends for Legends of WrestleMania, and I never turned back. And it was only till this year when I jumped in and fully enjoyed the Keith David trilogy and was like, oh, this is... I was such a silly boy for putting off this long. But also, I'm glad I put it off for this long because it's a really good trilogy to play for the first time during this year.
Plus, you got all the DLC, all the story bits, all the little... Yeah. Like, you got to completely avoid all the absolute BS that was the way that thing rolled out in the first place. It just got... I mean, it is what a definitive trilogy should be. Like, shout-outs to Rockstar. But yeah, I think... Josh, what were your thoughts going back to Mass Effect? Did you have as much of a reappreciation for it as me?
I think so. You know, I always knew that I loved Mass Effect 1. Like, I credit Mass Effect 1 in particular as being one of the games that, like, entrenched my love for gaming just, like, that much. But I always wondered how it was going to hold up because, to me, it was so new back in the day. And obviously, parts of Mass Effect 1 in particular haven't aged all that well. So I wondered whether it was just going to be a nostalgia thing, whether I was going to get that into it. And then after 2 hours, I was so into it, you know, getting to know all of these characters, getting to dive into the lore in a way that I hadn't before. And I just think that trilogy holds up so well, and all the games are so distinct from each other. Like, sometimes you get a trilogy and there's a definite through line between them and you kind of know what you're going to get. Like, the big tonal shifts between Mass Effect 1 to Mass Effect 2 to Mass Effect 3, for better or worse, just make it such a varied, textured thing to go through and take in all at once. And I've never done them back to back before. I've replayed them a lot, but I've never done them back to back, and it made you appreciate those differences so much more when they were in such close proximity to each other. And I thought that was a fascinating thing to discover about this franchise that I have played to death and that I've read about to death. The fact that it's still offering new things in this way, play Mass Effect Legendary Edition. Play it.
Doing them back-to-back was the thing that made me drop the hell off 3, because I was just... I mean, the thing is as well, now that we're this far removed from them, I think we talked about this when we did, because we did a string of podcasts, like one devoted to each game in a row, like back when they came out back in May or whatever it was. So please go listen to them. But I don't know where you guys land on what your favorite installment is, because I was always a Mass Effect 2 guy. I was always like, I love the side story. It's grittier. I love all the characters. I love things like Thane. But then when I went back through them now, I drastically prefer the original. I think that it has such a great sci-fi, Star Trekian, like, open-ended vibe. I love the story. It has so much weight. Like, you know, you're the first human Spectre in the galaxy, and it just, there's so much that I love about the way that thing's presented, and the fact that 2 is a side story, like, almost fundamentally, considering 3 picks back up where 1 was, that makes me prefer 1 overall. But, like, Benroy, where did you come down on what's your favorite 1?
It's weird, right? Because I think there's always going to be a part of me that thinks of Mass Effect 1 and thinks of not enjoying it, even though I really enjoyed it this time around, and it had been however many years, and I was now an adult. But I think maybe 2, and it's weird you saying, like, the disdain for 3, and having listened to podcasts over the years and hearing people shout on the hill that 3 was garbage and then it got fixed and blah 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 blah. But yeah, I liked 3 as well. I thought they did a really good conclusion. Like, with 2, I feel like its weakest point is it doesn't have the story is a game of side quests, right? Where you're they're very important side quests, not shooting them down like that. But there's no, like, sort of like, they break the formula, for better or worse. They're still, I think about it sometimes, I'm not totally sure, but obviously I enjoy all the characters in that a lot more. I think 3 falls down where some characters are just like, I'm in the shops. I'll see you in a bit, and then it's the end. someone went to get milk, and then they're at the very final battle, and you never really get to sort of like deal with them things. And one builds up in such a great way that the mystery is sort of there. But I'm gonna cheat and say it's all one game to me because I played them literally one after the other, and I'm never gonna play them on their own. When I go back to these games like another 10 years, I'll play it. Or when if the new Mass Effect comes out like in 2 years, I probably won't replay them all because screw that. But like, I'll probably just do them in like one sitting, but not obviously like pry in as much as I did this time.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's totally fair. Josh, did you have a reapproached favorite, or is it still, I think yours was two anyway.
Yeah, I'm the exact same as I was beforehand, but I don't think that's necessarily bad. If I was going to like recommend one to play to someone, it would be Mass Effect 2, because I think like as a game, the systems and the narrative, it just clicks so well. Like the game plays really well, everything connects to each other. But my personal favorite is one, just because of like the things you said, Scott, like the grandiosity of it, the way it introduces you to this new world, the tone of it, like I said, is very different to two, which is kind of more edgy and more of its time. Mass Effect 1 is almost more timeless in its presentation, and which I really like. I like its approach to sci-fi a little bit more, but they're all, you know, incredible. It's just that if you were going to play one, if one was going to convince you, I would say Mass Effect 2. I think your friend and mine, Ash Millman, did the same thing where she couldn't get into one necessarily, played two, and then went back and could appreciate it all. So I feel like that's the one that makes you click.
Yeah, that seems like crazy town. Just madness doing two, then one. But yeah, either way, you can't really go wrong. Just don't start with three, as EA told us all to do back in 2012. But yeah, we should also talk about Death Stranding. Me and Ben Roy didn't go back to this, but Josh, this was the thing that you just kept messaging us going, like, I've just done another 10 hours on Death Stranding, lads. Right, I've done 70 hours on Death Stranding, lads. And I've just banked a whole other playthrough. So what sparked that? And why did you stick with it? I guess because it got re-released on PS5.
Yeah, it was the PS5 remaster that did it, but I was really wanting to replay it before then. Truthfully, I can credit this to one Adam Nicholas, who played it fresh either at the start of this year or the end of last year, and absolutely loved it and got me excited to go back to it. And, you know, there were people joking at the start of last year that, you know, Death Stranding is the perfect pandemic game because you're playing as someone who is traveling with no one around and delivering packages to people who are all, you know, huddled up inside of their homes and in cities and stuff. And, you know, it is a bit of a joke, but also it's true. It is the perfect pandemic game that to play during this time because its themes and its kind of characterization in its world resonate. Obviously, it's not one for one, very radically different stories, but the feeling of it, I think, resonates so well. And obviously, being in during this entire period, and I got to appreciate it that way. But it was a game where I jumped in and I didn't know if I was going to bounce off it because I played so much of it previously. And then, like you said, you know, 70 hours went by and it was all I could think about. It was all I was playing, just the same as it was the first time around. And Ben Roy's mentioned on a podcast before that the platinum for that game is almost entirely different to the rest of it. Like, you don't play Death Stranding the same way if you're going for a platinum than you do when you're going through the story. And I kind of never really understood what Roy meant by that until I did it myself and was like, yes, those 20 hours getting in the platinum, that is a completely different style of play and a completely different experience. And I really enjoyed doing that this time around. Just
in terms
getting
of like
everything,
you're focusing on one person and getting everything, like instead of just kind of moving more through the map.
Kind of, yeah, because, you know, at that point you've presumably set up a lot of you know, roads and a lot of kind of like set points to get around places, and you're just kind of focusing on maximizing your points, which just makes you play in a different way. It's hard to explain if you haven't done it, but you're essentially just transporting like massive and massive amounts of goods from point to point over and over again, trying to get these final trophies, or you're like fabricating stuff that you would never use before in the main game, so you can notch off those trophies. It just makes you think in a different way. And, you know, the main campaign is about mastering the environment. It's about going through the uncharted areas. And the end game is essentially what you do when you've connected America and what you do when you've built those roads. And it's just a completely different thing. It's so weird.
There's something to shout out about the like mindset that Death Stranding puts you in. Like, I mean, I know Kojima was, oh, it's a new genre, it's the Strand genre, and like, I mostly agree with him. Like, I think that there was a bit of backlash at the time, going, well, you know, it's just an open world game, but it's not. Like, there is something to the way it's interconnected. The fact that you are working with other people without really realizing it. Like, someone can leave resources and you pick them up later, or you lose one of your weapons, or someone else will return it for you and stuff like that. Like, there is that interconnected web of you know, a community working together without really realizing it. And I think that does elevate it. Plus the amount that you spend running around just literally on foot, like, or just conquering a mountain one footstep at a time. Like, that stuff for me does elevate it. I think, I don't know if it was that mindset, the sort of almost calmness to it that like got you back in, but like, there's, how do you describe it? There's something to Death Stranding that's so unique in that way.
I think, you know, calm might not be necessarily the right thing, even though I would agree, just because it's so not calm when you're figuring it out. I think it's empowering. I think, you know, when you're playing through it, and like you said, you're climbing those mountains, you get this feeling that you're becoming empowered. You know, you're conquering the land, like you said. And there is a sense of tranquility and a sense of calm that comes with the isolation. That's really good. You know, I had a lot of fun this time around embracing that isolation. You know, spending a lot of time with Sam in his room, knocking back not Monster Energy drinks because they couldn't get the license back. Knocking back those energy drinks.
Bridges Cola or something.
Yeah, like Bridges Energy or something. Knocking those back, listening to the music, just appreciating the quiet. And the quiet is so much of that game. You know, I would happily play it if there was no combat and if there was no BTs. Like, for me, the enjoyment is just the mechanics, is just the world, is just being involved and in the moment in a way that, you know, so many of us have not been in the moment this year, because it's just been a strange old year.
It's very like the Mudrunner or the SnowRunner games in that way. Yeah. Benroy, did you feel any pull to go back to Death Stranding when they did the re-release?
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
No, it's a thing where I want to keep it in the box that I had it for a while. Like, part of me, when Josh was talking about the end game, like, I wonder what it'd be like if I just, you know, when I got everything done, just kill a bunch of people and watch the world blow up and like cause like giant holes in the terrain and wonder what that would do. But I was just thinking back to like the secret final boss of that game being Sam Lake and trying to arrange everything so I can never touch the floor and always going around these zip lines and everything along those lines. And yeah, transporting like all this giant cargo, and it turned it into a pseudo sort of like arcade game. But for me, it's one that I probably won't go back to for a while. I don't know, because I think because I did a lot of Kojima stuff this year, like I did Metal Gear 4, for example. So I had a lot of Kojima cutscenes in my life this year as it was. But it just feels like a point in time that I don't want to, like, not in a bad way, but I want to hold there and keep there and remember the weird times.
I think that's very valid.
I know exactly what you mean, Benroy, because Metal Gear Solid 5 is exactly that for me, and I thought Death Stranding would be as well, so I fully get that. Like, Metal Gear Solid 5 is like this thing that was of a time, and I almost don't want to touch it. It's like, it was a perfect time, and like, that's it. It was pristine.
I want to want to pivot off that and talk about the games that we just absolutely like ripped bit a chunk out of when they came along, because I feel like, you know, most years you have those sorts of games. Usually it's like top tier stuff. Death Stranding was one of them when it first dropped, where all three of us just, that was all we were doing, all we were talking about, all we were playing. And I don't know, I'm gonna like pass it over to you guys in a sec, but like, if I talk about games this year that, you know, I absolutely just devoured, there's only really a handful for me. Stuff that I like only played that one thing until it was done, and then it was done and I didn't replay it it again or whatever. And those things are almost down to two. It's Metroid Dread and Kena: Bridge of Spirits. Those were two that I just absolutely devoured. Hot Wheels Unleashed, I've almost done everything, and I was going to go for the platinum until it got crazy biscuits and it was all do 100 of this and 200 of that. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. But I have done all the campaign races. I've done whatever. Done a lot of Hot Wheels Unleashed. Never expected to like a Hot Wheels game in a million years. But that thing's incredible. And Halo Infinite, about 50 hours in, loving the multiplayer gameplay side of it, with the rest of it being a work in progress. But in regards to story stuff, Metroid Dread and Kena were the two that I absolutely devoured. I guess Resident Evil 8 as well. But passing that over to Benroy, did you find that this year, that there was like some stuff that pulled you in more than others? Because I feel like some people, when they say this year was disappointing, is because there weren't enough of those I need to play this style games where you're waiting all day to get back to play that one thing again.
Well, Resident Evil 8 definitely pulled me in for like about a month, because not only playing it and then doing the content on it and just being absorbed by Resident Evil for that sort of month. But I feel like I've given that game so much shine this year. So I want to say that is definitely a game that absorbed me. And also Halo Infinite has definitely absorbed me now. And I'm like, you know, can I sneak off for maybe 5 minutes early and get a game sort of thing. But
hey, the new XP weekly is alive in another hour from now. So
I just want to hammer some lads and then get done with it. And then, but what I will say is the game that really sort of like got its hooks back into me, which I've been waiting for ages, the Alan Wake remastered. Oh, yeah, get back into old Alan and just going back to Bright Falls and experience the goofy set dressing around it, and like the TV shows like Night Springs, and just playing that game again in like on a new generation, remembering how great it is. Even though I played it like the other year when it came to Xbox, when it was like bumped up a bit, but playing the remaster and having new Alan's face and like the weird, like the Easter eggs in there for like control stuff and the QR codes that take you to YouTube videos that are unlisted on YouTube that you can watch that also like blend the stories together. There's so much that's putting me back in there, and at one point I was like, I just wish the voice actor in Alan Wake read a book of Alan Wake so I could just listen to him talk about Alan Wake some more. I just want more Alan Wake after this. And I'm so excited to, because it's one of the biggest teasers that like we know what's happening, right? We know there's another Alan's returning, especially after the control stuff.
Yes.
But I just, it set me up so much, so ready for this. And it's like one of the most excited I've been for a single player experience in a while.
I think speaking of the dude, I forgot the name of the guy that plays Alan Wake, but I feel like Remedy, whoever their casting director is, just between James McCaffrey as Max Payne, the Courtney, whatever she's called, who plays the lady in control, I feel like all those performances are phenomenal. Clearly I'm a massive Max Payne fan. But yeah, I think that like Remedy overall should be like commended for that stuff. It's like Alan Wake was so ahead of its time, and the fact that it's revisitable 11 years later and it still just brings you in. Because I replayed the original one earlier this year and just burned through it. Might have been last year. Time is a flat circle, but it was very recent. And I feel like that game is just so well paced, the world and the messaging and everything. It just lands so well. But it's
Matthew
very, very good.
Matthew Poretta, by the way.
Okay, Matthew Poretta. Right. It's Courtney, someone there's... who plays Jesse Faden.
Yeah, Courtney. Yeah, Jesse Faden. And then there's a different, obviously, actor who plays the body of Alan Wake, who's also does great physical performances in the game. And they only get better in like the American Nightmare stuff, and when there's other aspects to Alan that get infused in, which I can't wait to see them pay off in that finally as well.
I like the Remedy shared universe. Also, it's Courtney Hope, for the quick little Google there. Also, there we go. To get back to the main thrust of this, Josh, how did you find stuff that you got stuck into? I know Death Stranding was a major point, but what's your general thoughts on, I guess, what's your thoughts on people calling the year disappointing in that regard? Or like what stuff stood out to you as something that you just took a big old chomp of?
Nah, you know what? I'm looking through my library now, which is why I've gone dark again on the screen. And I'm looking at 2021.
Homer Simpson in the bedroom, just a couple of hours.
I've got the Homer Simpson glasses on. I've got like the screen up on me.
Just
looking
he
through
grins
the telly
every now and then, like, yeah. Figured it out.
But I'm looking through and like, you are right, to be fair. The only 2021 game that wasn't a remaster that got me in, like in that kind of, you know, all-encompassing way was Returnal, which we've talked about, you know, to death at this point. Oh, so I won't yes, go over those points. But everything else, apart from that, I've really enjoyed, but haven't encountered in the same way that I encountered, you know, Disco Elysium Final Cut, the Mass Effect Legendary Edition, you know, stuff like when I had a bit, the Resident Evil phase, and I went through Code Veronica X, and I went through, you know, all of those old games, yes. Resident Evil 5 and stuff. So yeah, I think, you know, when it comes to the 2021 releases, nothing's got me in that way. And I think maybe that's part of why there's a collective potential feeling of disappointment, because there hasn't been, you know, that one big game, even of Cyberpunk's level, that we were all kind of in for like a whole month and taking apart. The closest I got to that was actually an ongoing game, which was Call of Duty Warzone. You know, Warzone was something that I was drinking and sleeping and thinking about all the time, and that was the only one apart from Returnal where I was living for the updates, I was living for the YouTube content, I was living for the season drops, I was living for playing it with my friends. And I feel like that's going to be the game when I look at the entire pandemic as a whole, that I just think of, that was the game, that was the game that got me through it, because I just played the hell out of it, and it was a source of connection that I wouldn't have otherwise had.
I will sidebar and say I did want to just bring it up, because I know I've spoken about it a lot, but I put probably over 100 hours plus of PUBG in during this year. Nice. So that's also one that it's been quietly being building up this whole time, but I've gone too much into PUBG, but saying the Warzone thing is like, oh God, yeah.
The thing is, we all have like those like on the side multiplayer games. Like I finally deleted Rocket League from my PS5 this year. Like it was finally replaced by Knockout City. That became my go-to multiplayer casual game. Like I'll have a game or something on the way to something else. That was what my Rocket League thing was. And it got replaced by Knockout City and then now replaced by Halo Infinite. But like there are just those games that tick up and that like sort of keep you going in between other releases, and you can just spend entire afternoons on them and stuff. We should talk about Returnal though, because as much as it might not be something that, I don't know if it powered us through the year, but all three of us have played it. It's not nominated for Game of the Year at the TGAs. I don't know if it'll get its due later on, but I feel like Returnal is just such a unique proposition. I know that like obviously Josh, I don't know if you're overall positive on it. I know you're quite positive on it, but I think Josh is the most favorable out of the lot of us.
It's weird because in a tangent way, we went in waves, didn't we? Where Josh first caught the radiation of that game and he reviewed it. And then you were in sort of like the second
phase
of it. That
thing almost finished me off. I almost didn't get through 2021 because of that game.
And then I stumbled onto it later in the year after smashing through Deathloop in like a week. And like, yeah, I destroyed that game. And then I went to Returnal and the Returnal took me and gave me a slap and go, no, mate, sit down. And the actual game itself is weird because... I really enjoyed it, but there's things like you have to be so I wouldn't play it unless it was a weekend before I'd beaten it, because I wasn't gonna sit there for like 2 hours and get nowhere, you know what I mean? I always went into it going, I'm getting progress or I'm snapping this disc. So it was a weekend game for a few weeks because I came to it super late and doing like there was a few 10-hour sort of like stints. I feel like there was at least one of them where I was just, it was because it kept, I think it was over across the time when it's getting dark early. So the first day it got dark, I was like, what's going on here? Have I been sucked in
all day?
Yeah. But I overall am very positive on it. Like in my personal list, it's kind of like midway through the top 10. Like it's, it gets bumped down by like a few other things like the Forgotten City and things like that. But Returnal, it's weird because they added in the suspend thing. So I was able to suspend it and then take a break and things like that, which obviously you two weren't because you two beat it before that update.
No, I was like half and half. When I resumed it, okay. It was after the thing. So I got the best of both worlds.
Problems with that game is I want to use one type of gun, maybe two. You die and you lose your gun, right? And then you've got... It's like the miniature of finding a new gun. Yes, I know there are loads of guns in there and you should be persuaded to use a lot of these other guns, but a lot of those guns are also crap. And I don't want a shotgun in that game. No. I want the range because you get these dirty cannon see you next Tuesdays that shoot you from far away and then they get hurt a bit, like, oh, now I'm going to kamikaze you in the mouth. And you'll fly and you'll be using your whip to fly away and they'll still be right behind you. And That one level where it's like the broken city in the sky. I'm gonna just
the wintry one.
The final one before you fight the boss in with all the platforms. The very orangey world.
Oh, I know what you mean. Sorry, yeah,
there were so many of those cannon guys that were just there, and I hated them so much. And then when the game didn't want to give me anything but a shotgun, I was like, well, I'm just gonna use the pistol. Then get over yourself. And then we finally come to an arrangement where I either had the what you'd call the assault rifle, or more like the LMG sort of gun. That's how I explain it for people that haven't played it. And then it gets better, but then like you die and then you lose everything, and then you're like, well, see you tomorrow.
Yes, I think that was the overall thing that kept making me go like, oh my God, I'm wasting my life. But I'm glad that game exists. I'm glad I finished it. I do have all six sun fragments for the secret ending, but I need to beat the final boss again. And then I dropped off that loop because Halo came out. I don't think I'm ever going to be able to get back again.
I'm going to pitch a list to you live on Air Sky. Most underwhelming bosses ever. That last boss, just how you just... You just spank it so easily. It's like, wait, is this boss?
I was also glad it was I did it first time, because I think if I died on a 45-minute run, I don't know what I would have done, because oh my God.
In the underwater area and there's like these big claw gits that go around clawing you in the war, and you just can't get away from them either. After you've finally got away from those cannon guys,
the word I used to describe it was cruel. I think it's a very cruel game. I think it abuses a person's time to play it. But I know that I'm not even letting Josh get in here, and he loves the thing. But
no,
I think it's telling. Well, no, I think it's curious that it's not been nominated for a game of the year. I think it should be in the top five game of the year. I think it should be alongside It Takes Two and Metroid Dread. It just should be up there. I think that ultimately, although it's challenging and cruel and off-putting, it is thoroughly it is rewarding by the end. For me, I was glad I went through it. We should end on a positive note, though. Josh, Returnal is your game of the year, I believe.
It is. And I'm not being quiet, by the way, because I'm secretly fuming or anything. It's because I
can't tell you in the dark, mate. I don't even know that's where he is.
I'm emotionless. I don't have a face. I've pulled my hat off my head. It's just because I've literally not stopped talking about this game since May, and I feel like I've said everything that could humanly be said about this game. But yeah, at the moment, and I will say it again when we come to the game of the year discussions, and I have to repeat all this stuff and fight for it. But yeah, it's my game of the year. It was the only one that got me in that mindset of I want to beat it. You know, I was staying up until the early hours of the morning, and it just got its hooks in me in a way that genre never has before. You know, I've never enjoyed a roguelike in that way, even the good ones like Hades. And yeah, I think if you jive with it, you can have a great time, though then you get to the platinum run and you might hate it forever. That's the only thing I might say.
Yes.
Similar finding to Death Stranding. Random. Horrible.
Yeah. The platinum end game for that thing is it'll test your mettle. If you think you love it, try that. Try encountering the RNG nightmare that they've patched and it's still somehow horrific. That is trying to find all of the runes and the glyphs and stuff.
Yeah, making it so that you need to get like 50 glyphs, but they turn up at random that's a hell in itself. And we should end on just one recommendation each if we have them. Benoit, you were mentioning Chernobylite earlier on. Do you have something else that's maybe a bit under the radar that you want to shout out, or do you want to stick with Chernobylite?
If you got an Xbox, if you're a Game Pass, or if not, play It Takes Two with someone, because It Takes Two is great, but also play Chernobylite because I said so.
Are we talking about games that released in 2021?
Yes.
Or any game in the world?
No, it's not just any game in the world, otherwise it'd be Blood Omen 2. No, what have you got?
2021. Well, it'll be Returnal, but that's a given, obviously. Mm-hmm. Apart from that, honestly, we haven't talked about it much. Forza Horizon 5, man, has been tickling my pickle over the past few weeks. And I know a lot of our co-workers, like James Dowis, has been incredibly into it. If you've got an Xbox, you've got Game Pass, download that thing, man, because it's a good game, and that's something that will dominate your time if you let it. So,
I think for me, I think I've said this every time, but it was so close to Forza Horizon 4. Like, it opens in the same way, the beats of the intro are the same, and I was like, oh my God, as someone who put a lot of time into 4, restarting that put me off. But if it's your first Forza Horizon, or you haven't played 4 in a while or whatever, then yeah, you can get absolutely lost in that game. My shout out is just Monimals. I just feel like the whole world needs to know about Monimals. This little game, little platform thing where you play as like a jazzy frog or a heavy metal loving hippo, and you go with your fishing rod and you find notes in a pool, and then you make songs with the notes that you find, and then you can upload the songs and everyone can share all the music, and it's a beautiful little time. So I'm just shouting out Monimals. It's on Switch. I don't know where else it is, but I love it. I love it so much, and no one else cares. And it's not in any other, it's not in the indie category, it's not anywhere, but it's a lovely little game, Monimals. But yes, this has been... Oh, carry on.
I was going to say, I think, you know, me and Benroy also have to shout out, because we're contractually obliged, we're not really, the Forgotten City. We have to say the Forgotten City every single time. That is incredibly recommendable. So That's the final word. That's all I'm going to say.
You definitely, everyone should, who can hear our collective voices, go play The Forgotten City. Is such a reminder of what something might be like if Bethesda quality controlled their releases and focused on story, considering it is a mod made into a full game. But yes, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Unpacking is also on Game Pass. Play that.
It is actually as well. And Josh Brown.
Have you heard of a series called Grand Theft Auto? Because they just had a really good trilogy remaster that
probably
you can
better
play as well
the Sopranos want. Game, to be honest. But we will catch you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.